Log Talk Radio.
Because for whatever reason, when I'm running the show, she doesn't go on mute. When she's running the show, somehow I always magically, mysteriously wind up on mute. A coincidence? I don't think so. I think this woman is trying to shut me up. Good luck. You've been trying to do it for decades. It still ain't working. Give up. Anyway. Happy Friday, y'all.
I think it's this computer.
Welcome to Desperate House Witches. And so, before we get started, first order of business. If you are new to Desperate House Witches, thanks for showing up. We're happy you came. However, we need to issue this warning. Desperate House Witches is not a G or even an R-rated show. So, if dirty talk, bad language, bodily functions, or any other crass thing that may come out of my mouth might technically offend you, this may not be the show you want to listen to. However, if you are kind of loosey-goosey and feeling all in yourself on a Friday night, stick around because we like to laugh and we know you do too. So, Desperate House Witches is also brought to you by the one, the only, the incredible, I cannot wait to talk to her next month, the amazing Dorothy Morrison of www.wickedwitchstudios.com. She makes lotions, potions. Well, she doesn't make lotions. Does she make lotions? No, she makes sprays, oils, candles, and all kinds of magical goodness. She's a writer. She makes things. She's very creative. She's a Renaissance woman. She is one of my favorite people on the face of this earth, as she is also my sister's, and we adore her. And
yes,
coming up very soon in May will be the re-release of her amazing book, my favorite book of this type, Utterly Wicked, her book of hexes and unsavory notions. Oh, yes, it is coming out again. It did so well in its first pressing. It is being remastered, remixed, and redone. It's all the same thing. It's just a different cover. See, I'm just playing with you.
Yeah.
But it's a great book. I highly recommend. Sis highly recommends. We highly recommend. And if you need any of Dorothy's products shipped overseas, please contact The Angry Cauldron at www.theangrycauldron.com. They do all of her international shipping. Once again, that is www.wickedwitchstudios.com. Check it out. Okay. Did you see the snow that wasn't? All right. So here's the story. We got all kinds of warnings and shit about this horrible storm that was coming. Oh, my God. Everybody go buy milk and bread for those milk and bread sandwiches. Everybody, keep your children indoors. It is the snowstorm of the century. It's going to wipe us all out. Yeah. So it snowed for a few hours. It did. And I had been telling people for days, ground's too warm. The ground's too warm. It ain't going to stick. Ground's too warm. Sure enough, it starts snowing last night. All of a sudden, the school system says, well, we can't take a chance. We're going to close the schools, and we're telling you right now tonight. They had made a decision like well before 6 a.m. It must have been like midnight. I think I was still awake when they decided it. I'm like, yeah, pack it, wusses. What is your problem? In our day, we had to go to school whether it snowed, rained, hailed, it didn't matter. Your ass got up, got dressed. If the school didn't, let me tell you why the school would close. A shooting. That was a reason in New York. If there was a shooting at a school, we didn't go in. And if the snow was over 6 inches, okay, not a little powdery dusting, not a little quarter of an inch slushiness. 6 inches is what closed down the schools back in the 70s, a million years ago before most of you were born. So, I mean, I understand safety first. I get it. I get it. But, you know, a lot of us had to walk to school. Some of us walked 2 miles to school when it was necessary. So, anyway, that's my beef about that. Woohoo.
Yeah.
But anyway.
I think, you know, because I actually went into work a little bit later this morning because I told my bosses, I was like, I was worried about the ice on the roads in the morning before the sun came up.
Yeah.
You know, because it was a lot of it, you know, some of it melted last night. It turned into rain. So it was pretty wet this morning. And I think that was their concern
wet.
Because, you know, huh?
You said wet.
Oh, I did say wet. Yeah, sorry, I was talking over you. But, I don't know. I think because we don't have the same equipment, you know, because we don't have that much snow. And it's like, for
you
some
know,
reason,
I agree it freaks
everybody out.
I know, but see, here's the thing. I have now lived in Charlotte for on and off for over 25, going on 30 years. Okay? We know that at least at one time, maybe two times in the season, we're going to have some snow. We just know it. It is a fact.
Yeah.
So why aren't we fucking prepared? I mean, really, get out there, put your damn sludgy, crappy, salty shit down. You know, it's like...
Exactly.
Solid semen is what I call it. You know, put that out, get that down, and just, you know, be prepared for it. There's no reason to not be prepared. You know, back in my day, again, in the Stone Age, we didn't have teacher work days, you know? Teachers did not get teacher work days. Kids were not home at least once a month because of something having nothing to do with a holiday. And I love teachers. It's not about teachers. It's about the system, you know. It's about the way the system is set up. Teachers didn't do that. If you think teachers set up the system, you are sorely mistaken. Believe me. Teachers are subjected to bureaucracy and bullshit like the rest of us. Poor things. Only they have it worse.
Yeah.
But anyway, I love teachers, man. I have nothing but respect for teachers. It takes a special kind of human to be a teacher.
Oh, yeah.
I was actually supposed to be a teacher. Could you imagine my cranky ass teaching your child shit? I don't think so. It would not be optimal.
Oh.
But
No.
I'd be cracking skulls all day. You know, we were such bad children in New York. We were so bad that, like, we would throw the teacher's coat out the window. We would toss his desk. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
We were some crazy-ass people. Yeah, we were the most unruly bunch of motherfuckers you can imagine. It was not good. And then half of us were learning witchcraft anyway because we just were, you know. It's just, I don't know, maybe it was the year, you know. I don't know if it was a post Vietnam thing. I don't know what the fuck it was, but like me and like half my friends were all like, let's burn some candles, let's make some shit happen. Come on.
Yep.
Yeah. But I don't know. You know, kids today, they don't do it like we did. I don't know. They've got their faces in these fucking telephones and iPads and laptops. And listen, I do too. Shit, I love the fuck out of some technology. I deal with it all damn day. But it's like, they're not fucking anymore. It's amazing. What happened? Like, back in my day, everything we did had some kind of connection to sex. These days, no. It's not connected to sex. I don't know what it's connected to. I mean, I think some of them still want to have sex, but they don't give a shit. And I'm like, you don't give a shit? That's all we used to think about. Come on now. So, praise be on them, because I'll tell you quite frankly, every fucked up thing I ever did in my life was tied to some tail. That's all I'm going to tell you. It is truth. It is absolute truth. But now it's tied. But you know what? Now it's tied to food, and food is very appropriate to discuss tonight, because our guest is going to be Glenn Raven, and he wrote a book, which Hilaire, you want to talk about what I'm good at? I'm talking about the magic of food. I'm telling you. I'm not an expert in anything, but one thing I'm fucking great at is eating. I can eat the shit out of a meal. So, very excited. Very excited to talk about this book. This book has recipes. This book discusses ritual, offerings. Amazing. You know, community and food. I'm like, you know, now this is something I can talk about, because I'm good at putting stuff in my mouth. I said putting stuff in my mouth. I did.
And I think, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's like people don't get together as much as they used to. Like, you know, you go out to eat, but you don't really, I don't know. I mean, maybe it's just my little circle or whatever, but, you know, you don't really have, like, family meals, like, with you know, friends that have become family. Like, you know, huge table, big spread. You know, we kind of, we're separating, you know, communal-wise. You know, we need to get
and
back to that.
And that's because everybody, but see, like, everybody shows up at the table with the phone in their hands. And it's like, I am not allowed to bring my phone to the table. And I'm like, but it's my appendage. Well, you know, we call it the
leash. I know.
Because that's what it is. We still call it the leash, by the way. I know. But I might miss something.
I mean,
I've got that FOMO. You know that FOMO. I might be missing out on something. Apparently, however, even with the FOMO, I don't have any fear of missing out on putting something in my mouth, because apparently I have gained enough weight to say I qualify to know about eating. Absolutely. It is one of my skills. I'm very proud. It is one of my, because I'm always telling guests, listen, I don't know how to do anything but talk. Oh, au contraire, the bitch can eat. I can put away some food. That is for sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you can cook.
I can cook and my waist be expanding. Oh, and I have to give a shout out here, because I just fucking have to. So, Matt Oren, if you're listening, I love the shit out of you. You are amazing and hilarious, and you make me laugh, and you make me a happy person, and you are my gay crush. I do not care. So, there.
Oh,
everybody who knows Matt Oren,
adorable.
Go tell him I said that. Go tell him I said that and see what he says, because I am just dying to know. Yes, I am a harmless old lady, but I can still have a crush on a good-looking young man. I'm just saying.
There you go. And he is. He is gorgeous. Handsome little thing.
And smart. Smart.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I like him smart and cute. And he fits that very, very well. But anyway. So, yeah, you know, I agree with what you're saying about people not eating together as a family anymore. Remember the last time we actually did that? It was like we went out to a restaurant and we had a huge-ass table, and there were like 14 of us at this table, 12, 14 of us at the table. Do you remember when we went to Sal's?
Oh,
yeah. So fun.
Oh, yeah. That was my introduction to Sal's, and I have introduced a plethora of people to Sal's since then because they are so good.
It is so good. And we are not paid by Sal's Pizzeria or Pizza Factory, but they make tasty stuff. So if you're ever in Charlotte, we will take you over there, and you will have pizza like you had in New York. And you will love it because we love it. It's good stuff. I'm just saying. I'm really getting into this food thing tonight.
Yeah, and Sal's, they have, because Little Man, they do have a pizza for kids. It's a bit much, but my son absolutely friggin' went ape crap over it. And then the next time he ordered, he wanted three slices. And I was like, two is going to be too many because they are huge.
Uh-huh.
I mean, massive. Perfect. But,
Perfect.
Yeah, the Perfect. One with the fries on it, which is a bit amazing, but he loved it. Yeah.
Oh, shit.
He had two slices.
Love. It's grease and cheese and sauce and potatoes.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
What could be bad in a child's life eating that, I ask you? I mean,
exactly.
For real. That's some serious food. He's amazing.
Yeah.
We need that, yeah. But,
poor baby.
I was looking over the book, and I was thinking, we always talk about how important community is, and the first thing I think of when I think of community is food. Honestly, the first thing I think of 9 times out of 10 is food. but, when you're talking about gathering with people and people that you love and people that you want to get to know, we used to always do it over food. The world's changed a lot. Now it's over Messenger. It used to be in person over a meal, And it's good to reconnect with people. And it doesn't have to be fancy, and it doesn't have to be at a restaurant. But, interested in hearing the guests' thoughts on, why we do things the way we do now as opposed to the way we did things then, and, how do we get back to... Because it's really hard to get people all together in one spot these days.
Yeah,
actually,
it really is.
I know.
That's why I think Mystic South is such a blessing. Because we can all get together.
Thank you for reminding me. Mystic South is happening July 17th, 18th, and 19th at the beautiful DoubleTree Hilton in Atlanta, Georgia. We will be there. We hope you'll be there because a lot of the people that we have on the show are going to be there. So if you're interested in meeting them, you need to show up, and if you want to meet us, we'd like to meet you, so show up. It's going to be great. Registration is open and happening, and if you have something you want to teach or a presentation or a workshop, they are still taking applications, I believe, but you got to hurry because, we're there in July, and it's almost the end of February, so they're making decisions now, so it would be good to join on to that. It's going to be a great time. It's always a great time. Very excited. And also, might as well do the other plug. Wild Hunt, please support the Wild Hunt. Wild Hunt is the pagan paper of record. We need it. We cannot afford to lose it. You keep hearing about fake news and Russian bots. Well, we know who writes for the Wild Hunt. They are actual journalists. It's a blessing. It's something we can't do without. So please support the Wild Hunt. They are amazing. But back to tonight's topic of eating, which, hello, I love that.
Hello.
We have a guest in the queue. What do you think? Shall we bring on our guest?
Bring him on.
Let's bring him on. Mr. Gwen Raven.
Hello. How are you doing this evening?
Oh,
fantastic.
We were just talking
How are you?
We were talking about food.
Oh, well, I mean, if we're going to talk about food, then I'll probably I'll hang out for a while then.
Yay! That sounds like a great idea. So,
I agree.
You wrote this amazing book. First of all, thank you so much for coming on. You are a brave man, because with us, you don't know what you're getting, darling. So I was saying to Sis that, you know, I always tell our guests, listen, I am not a very learned person. I am not a very smart person. I'm not a writer. I'm not a singer. I don't paint. I don't draw. I don't do any of the creative arts things. I do talk. But you, my friend, have found something that I love to do that I am an expert at, and that is food. I love to eat. So you are perfect for me.
Well, that's fantastic. You had me at I like food.
I mean, are there people that actually don't like food? Is that even a thing?
You know, oddly enough, and I would say sadly enough, that is a thing. There are folks that, you know, just kind of look at food like it's the thing that you shovel in your mouth before you get to the next thing that you're going to do, right? So I have a very different view of food than that.
Yeah, and which I, of course, appreciate. However, I have the opposite problem. When something tastes good, I love it until I'm sick.
Yeah.
Which is
I'm the same way.
The opposite end of the spectrum.
I like to say I've never met a cheese that I don't like. And that's really like, if I find a cheese that I like, I'm like, how much more of this can I possibly eat tonight? And the answer is, oh, yeah, all of it. I can eat all of it. That's how much I can eat.
Oh, I do that with blue cheese and red dragon cheese.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh,
red dragon cheese is my favorite. I love red dragon. Have you had it?
It's amazing.
I have, yes. So very good. Blue cheese. Oh, my gosh. Like, you name them, right? You know, English Stiltons, love them.
Good
gorgonzola.
Yes. All the and Dolce gorgonzola, you know, like the really sweet, creamy gorgonzola. It is.
I have not had that.
Oh, treat yourself. It's absolutely wonderful. It's exactly, you know, it's got all the gorgonzola flavors that you would expect. It's a little bit sweeter, a little bit creamier.
Ooh.
It's decadence. It should be illegal. I'm glad it's not, but it should be.
Okay, I love you officially, and we are blue cheese buddies.
You are, because excellent. I cannot handle blue cheese to save my life. I am a Brie triple cream girl. That is my deal.
Wow. I mean, that just none of these, you're saying things that are just making me salivate over here. I'm going to have to pour myself another glass of wine and find some cheese up in here.
Ooh, yummy.
So, it just so happens that in town tomorrow, there is a Parmigiano Reggiano event at our local store. So I will be there at 3, eating my way through a wheel of cheese. Come see me.
Are there any more beautiful words in the English language than a cheese event? I mean, that just
yes. I need to go.
Yeah, I agree.
Come on,
I agree.
Go. You know,
all right.
But truthfully, let's get back on topic here. Well, I mean, we are on topic, but let's discuss this amazing book you wrote, because it has been a really long time since anybody's even talked about food as a connector between people and gathering around it and making it an event. And, you know, I love your book. I love your book because it reminds me of all the things I liked as a child about community and family and how far we are from it. And that part stinks, and how do we get back to it? And is that why you wrote this? Why did you write this?
You know, I wrote it for several reasons. And I think one of them is when I chat with people around the various communities that I'm in, especially magical communities, I think we have this notion that magic is something that you do once every 8 weeks on high days and holidays, that magic is something that's done, you know, in dark, in secret, that you have to have just the right herbs or just the right candle, and it can only be done on a full moon, and all of those things are wonderful. And there are some really good values in practicing magic like that, right? But for me, I think there is great value in doing magic every single day. And a lot of people get really intimidated by that. They think, oh, I couldn't do a daily practice. I don't have 5 minutes to sit and meditate or you know, draw a pentacle or whatever it is that folks might imagine that a daily practice is.
Yeah.
But every single person that I know gets up in the morning and they stir cream or sugar into a cup of coffee, or they dunk a tea bag into some hot water, or they make a protein shake, but they do something in the morning every day. And you know what? You can take that minute in the morning when, right after you've poured your coffee and you stir it, you know, stir it clockwise. Think about the good things that are coming to you. Stir your coffee first thing in the morning, and that can be magic right then and there. And so I think the real answer is, I wrote this book because food, for most people, for most of our lives, food is something that we engage with every single day. And when there are moments of joy and moments of tragedy and moments of celebration, the very first thing we do is reach for our cookbooks, and we make cakes, and we make, you know, favorite recipes from relatives, and we gather around food. And so I thought, you know what, magic and food go together. And then, of course, as it turns out, for thousands of years in practically every culture where they've had some kind of magical tradition, there are food practices, there are offerings for the gods. So just made a lot of sense. Plus, you know, it gave me a good excuse to write a book about 42 of my favorite recipes, right?
Oh, lovely.
Well,
is there any blue cheese in there?
I'm sorry.
There is.
There's
a recipe in the back of the book which is all about finger foods, right? And you could definitely make blue cheese one of those, for sure.
Ah, lovely.
Oh yeah.
Blue cheese stuffed olives. That's my jam.
Oh, yeah. That's good stuff right there.
Oh, my God. This is just like, it's sexy. This is like such a sexy conversation, because I always draw the line between food and sex because I'm of an age where I still remember what it was like to be young and enjoy all that. I mean, just saying. But, you know, I like the idea that you have spells in the recipe. You know, it's really beautifully done. I'm really fascinated by your food magic, especially, you know, for specific things, you know, like in Praise of Inanna, you know, your Sumerian recipes, and it's like, oh, I wanted to try to make lamb like this. I wonder if I can now. Maybe with this I'll be able to. I mean, I'm just, it's fantastic, you know, and it's interesting because we recently moved in with my younger son, as opposed to him moving in with us, we moved in with him. And his diet before we moved in was cereal and pasta. And, you know, now that I live here with him, I put something up in the slow cooker every single week. There's got to be a hot meal that's not going to cause his blood pressure to rise or his cholesterol to go through the roof. You know, so I'm thinking of it not just as I'm feeding him, but I'm also looking at it as more of a medicinal to stop him from basically killing himself with bad foods.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, when I think about it, you know, you asked me about why I wrote the book, and I talked about, you know, kind of high days and holidays and big ceremonies. And I think sometimes we have this notion that the little magics that we do aren't as important. But if you could just take that whole sentence that you just said, what you want more than anything is you want your son to be happy and to be healthy and to be well nourished. And you can look at that on a lot of different levels, right? But is there any greater magic in the world than making sure that someone that you love and care about is well fed and well nourished and they know they're loved because you cook for them regularly? I mean, really, there's all kinds of amazing magic we can do, folk magic, conjuring magic, being in devotion with our gods. Those are great things. But really, if you can keep your son happy, well fed, and well nourished, that's the best magic we can ever do in our lifetime, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, I know.
Yeah.
That's lovely. I love the way you put that. I didn't, you know, just being a mother, you have certain attitudes, and my sister is a mother as well. We have certain attitudes towards the things we do with love for our family, but I forget in the moment that, you know, because what you said before was completely correct about, you know, when you stir the cream into your coffee or when you add honey to a pot or something, or when, you know, you cook for someone you love because you're concerned, or, you know, you just want to make sure that they're okay. There's a lot that can be added to that, you know, right in that instant. You know, you add honey for the sweetness of life, or, you know, you add a little bit of wine just for the flavor of life, or, you know, I mean, there's so many ways to do this, and I just love that finally somebody put it in a book.
Yeah.
You know, one of my favorite ways to do magic with food, you reminded me of something when you were saying that, is that I try and make my meals colorful, and I like to serve things in lots of different bowls and dishes. And I do that for a couple of reasons. You know, if I'm doing some kind of love magic, right, I love to have red foods. I like to serve in red bowls. I like to have, you know, the colors and the textures of food really match the kind of magic that I'm doing. Same thing when I'm making, I'm doing abundance magic, right? If I want something to manifest or to come to me, I like to have lots and lots of small dishes with food. Partly, you know, the sympathetic magic of that is, look at this abundant table. I've got green things and gold things, you know, all these lovely colors that we associate with money or wealth or abundance. And whether that's the plate you use or the utensils that you use or the food that you cook with, there's so much that you can do so that everything from the tablecloth to the knife and fork to the dishes to the meal itself, all of that can be in concert with the magic that you're doing. And it's so easy to do. And you're right, a little bit of honey here for sweetness, a little bit of rose water here for love. So easy to do. Really easy to do.
Oh, wow. And we have an amazing place near us that has, they sell rose water. It's a spice shop, and they have rose water and orange water, and they have seven different types of cinnamon from different parts of the world, and they're all slightly different. And then there's like another dozen different types of cocoa, and, you know, vanilla beans from Madagascar, and some are Tahitian, and I mean, it's, you can bring in all kinds of practices, all kinds of regions. You can bring in hoodoo and Wicca and, you know, whatever. It's really, I never thought about it, like all the different places and influences you can bring in just through the food or the spices that you're using. Like tomorrow night, apropos nothing, tomorrow night, you're avoiding exhaustion spell. I'm putting on chicken. I'm actually making this dish tomorrow. So I'm pretty excited. And it's got cumin and coriander and chili powder and paprika and allspice and black pepper. And I'm probably going to throw in some curry powder because I think it's going to fit somewhere in there.
Yeah.
I may back off on chili powder a little bit, or the all, I may pull out the allspice and substitute it with some curry powder and
yeah.
make like a sort of a buttered chicken feel. We love Indian food. We love all kinds of foods. But this is something that my son's really wanted me to make because he loved Indian food so much. And I'm like, yeah, I can do it. I'm going to do it. So I saw that in the book, and I'm like, oh, I'm making that. That's great. But I love the fact that it's avoiding exhaustion. And is it avoiding exhaustion? Like, why is that an avoiding exhaustion spell? What are the spices doing that help that?
So a lot of those spices really help your metabolism move, right? So they create, in a good way, they create a little bit of fire in your belly. They will also stimulate various chemical reactions in your body. So there's some real science behind this as well, right? They'll stimulate your metabolism. They'll help fire some of the neurons in our brain. So when you know you're going into a situation that might, you know, you're going to be gone all day, it's going to be a big work party, whatever it is, by using some of these spices, you're enlivening your senses. The smells, when the cumin and the coriander and the allspice, you know, when they all start to sizzle and heat and release their oils, they're really bright in the nose and they'll wake you up. And you mentioned adding curry powder, great way to do it. You can add turmeric in there as well. Same idea, they wake up the senses. So it's this way of saying, okay, I'm going to cook this food. I'm going to enliven my senses. I'm going to get my metabolism moving. I'm going to get my brain cells firing. And that's going to help me get through this period where, you know, I've got to sit through an insurance seminar for 3 hours and I know I'm going to fall asleep. So, you know, this will keep me going.
So true. I'm telling you. I think people do not realize, and I'm glad you brought up business in relation to this, because I work in an atmosphere where somebody is always bringing food, and I think they're choosing the wrong foods for these meetings because they're picking things that are lulling people to sleep, you know.
Yeah.
Like, here's a donut and some coffee. Now, while the coffee is supposed to wake you up, the donut is putting your stomach to work and making you tired because it's not really nutritionally dense in any kind of sense. It's dense, but not from a nutritional standpoint. And I don't think it's helping fire those neurons that you were mentioning.
Yeah, it really makes a difference. You know, you know, cheese, as much as we all love cheese, if you have big cheesy gooey things like macaroni and cheese, and don't get me wrong, I love me some macaroni and cheese. I think it's fantastic and ooey and gooey and cheesy and delicious, and it'll put you into a food coma, right? So I think you're right. people bringing in breads and donuts, again, really delicious. I mean, they can be fabulous foods in the right place. But, yeah, in a business meeting, it just knocks you out. You know, fresh fruit much better. Because, again, the fruit, you know, there's tartness and sweetness and crunch and juice and all of those different things. And, you know, if you think about it, there's a section in the book where I talk about aphrodisiacs. And some of what makes aphrodisiacs work is the, you know, the chemical compounds and whatnot in the actual food. But most of it is about how we are excited. And when we get curious and excited, different chemicals in our brains, like dopamine, for instance, they all start flooding our system. And so when you are, if you're at a business meeting and you have lots of little food, so instead of having a donut, imagine having a little square of baklava or a petit four, right? Something that's kind of small.
Yeah. Sure.
If you've got grapes and nuts and things that look different, smell different, have different textures, as a human, we get excited about that. This thing will crunch. This thing will be juicy. this thing will be sweet. And what happens is it quite literally floods our system with dopamine. And when we get dopamine in our system, we're more amenable, we're more open, we're more creative. And in a business meeting, that's probably what you want, right? People to bring their creative ideas to whatever the problem is. And that's how that works. Same thing with aphrodisiacs, right? If you go on a date, if you were involved in such things, if you were out on a date, it's better to eat like tapas, like lots of small bites, rather than ordering that big giant steak. Because two reasons, I mean, let's be frank here. One, if there's lots of little things for you to nibble on and lots of little things for you to explore and lots of little things for you to put in your mouth and to feel with your hands, you can see where this is going already, right? If you eat a giant bowl of macaroni and cheese, you might just want to go to sleep, which is perfectly fine if that's what you want to do after the date. But if you imagine this might be a date that, you know, moves in another direction and gets a little bit more amorous, you don't want to be weighed down by 3 pounds of steak in your stomach, you know?
Filet
mignon,
I might make an exception for.
Yeah, good filet mignon, but you know, that's small, right? You know? I love filet mignon.
Yeah,
it's one of my favorites.
It's mine too, but it's not a large piece of meat. I said meat.
That's right.
But yeah, I love it, but I like what you're saying about little different bites like tapas and things. You know, one of my favorite places to go is a place where they serve, we call them prizes, but they bring out, you know, like a little bowl of kimchi or a little bowl of, you know, the baby eels or a little bowl of, you know what I mean, though. It's like, a lot of Asian restaurants bring out all these beautiful little bowls, and they're in colorful dishes, just like you were saying. And they'll bring out 6 of them, 8 of them, all different, all small, all for sharing. And it's like everyone's reaching across the table and wanting to try a little bit of this or a little bit of seaweed salad or all these little different things that we usually don't have access to. And it makes it really fun, and it makes it very exciting. And, you know, I love the idea of that kind of communal eating. Sis and I were talking about it before, too, before you came on, how people don't do this anymore. We really don't connect with each other through food like we used to. And it's really sad. And I'm wondering if you have ideas on how do we fix that? You know, what kind of directions can we go in where we regain some of that communal feeling?
Yeah, you know, there are a couple of things. I talk about some of them in the book, but there are just some really good tips, right? So there was this interesting study done. I think it was in Sweden or Denmark, but they were working with a group of students. And what they encouraged them to do was to eat together. And by that, I mean not just at the same time, but you make a dish, I make a dish, Sis makes a dish, and then we all put them on the table at the same time, and I share a little bit of what you made, and you share a little bit of what I made. So you literally eat together. It's family style, right? And what they discovered was people that share food, not just sit at the same place and eat their own stuff on their own plate, but people that share food, that communal dishes, are much more likely when somebody calls and says, hey, can you help me move this weekend? They're much more likely to say yes, or to pick you up at the airport, or to give up their seat on public transport for somebody else, because they're really aware of people's preferences and choices. So what I might discover is, maybe I really love that cucumber salad that you made, and you really like those roasted red peppers that I made. So I noticed that you take a few more of those. So I say, oh, well, okay, I'll take a few less. So rather than hoarding them or feeling like, oh, there's not enough here, I say, oh, look, she really likes those. I'll have something different. So eating communally, where you literally share food, really makes a difference, because you get to know people's likes and dislikes and what they really gravitate to. And you're also more aware of, oh, you know what, there's only two pieces of steak left. Hey, does anybody else want some, or can I have that? So there's communication that happens. So that's one thing. And I think if we took that out to our covens or working groups or, you know, whoever you gather with magically, I think if we actually share time and food with each other, not just space, that makes a difference. The second thing that I would say is really taking a moment between whatever else it is you're doing in the day and the moment when you eat with somebody, and making that moment sacred. I talk about this idea of all food being sacred, but I also think all meals or all meal times are sacred. And look, the fact of the matter is we all live very busy lives, but if you think about it, I bet there's probably been a time where you've said you'll meet somebody for lunch, and when you get to the restaurant or the cafe, wherever it is you're going to meet, you get there and you spend 10 minutes talking about how bad traffic was, or the 5 emails that came in right before you left, and they tell you about their kids, and you know, they, little Jimmy was late for school today because he just didn't want to get out of bed, and you hear all of this. Now all of a sudden 30 minutes has gone by and you've been putting French fries in your mouth or a salad, and you actually haven't stopped to think about the food, and you haven't really actually stopped to talk with the person that you're having lunch with. So I kind of have a rule where when I get to a restaurant, if I'm meeting people, I say, all right, let's take 10 minutes just to kind of, you know, vomit up all the stuff that's been going on all day long and get that out. Mm-hmm. And then we'll order food. Then we'll think about what we want to eat. And then we enjoy the meal. And I ask, what are you doing now? How's your day going? Not what you're going to do after lunch, not what you did before lunch, but like what's happening, what's good in your life right now. And I think those ways that we can make mealtime sacred is, you know, all the things like putting down our phones and turning off the television and not being on our laptop with the television on while we're trying to eat, you know, those kind of things. All of those are important, but magically speaking, just making this line and saying, now the food is on the table, or now the wait person has brought us, you know, our meal. Let's only do that thing and eat and enjoy each other's company and, you know, share each other's kimchi or whatever it is we're eating. And if we can do that, I think we can re-enchant meal times. We can make moments special. We'll remember to ask things like, hey, this is a really nice shepherd's pie. Where'd you get the recipe for this? And then all of a sudden, I'm going to tell you that this is my grandmother's shepherd's pie recipe and why I love it. And now we're having a conversation about food or food memories that actually make food taste better. So, I mean, I think those are things that we can do, is just appreciate that every meal we eat, even if it's at 60 miles an hour on the freeway, we can still take a moment before we put that food in our mouth and remember that it's sacred. Somebody cooked it. Somebody put it in a bag. Somebody bought the ingredients and made the meal. There's lots of things we can do to make our food sacred, but one of the biggest things is just stopping and actually looking at what we're about to eat and the people we're about to eat with.
Yeah.
That's so true. You know, we have this thing at our house now, and it's not something we ever had before we lived where we live now. And we've only been living here for the past three and a half months. And the rule is that when you get home, you can, you know, you were talking about pretty much word vomit and just getting all the negativity out, talking about all the stuff that stressed you out at work. Like, all of that has to be done before we sit down to the table. So you get this amount of time, whatever amount of time you need, you know, whether it's 5 minutes or 20, doesn't matter. But, like, everybody has to, like, spit it out, let it out before we actually sit down to the table at the house. So we're trying to rid ourselves of, we don't want to bring negativity into the kitchen because we don't want negativity to touch the food. that we're about to eat. So it's like, out of the room, everybody just say what you got to say so we can go eat, you know? And it's really a difference. You know, we don't bring our phones to the table unless there's an emergency, you know, and we don't, we just basically talk about things we want to do, which has been a real change from the way we used to do it. Because everything yeah. used to be, hurry up, I've got things to do, I don't really have time to engage, I'm just going to shovel it in, like you said, and move on to the next thing that I have to get done. And it's so important to take that time and just, like, try to spit out the bad stuff so that you don't bring it into the meal.
That's really right. You know, Raina, I think that, well, I think most witches and pagans and druids and, you know, pick your flavor of pagan, right? But there's usually mm-hmm. some point in ritual where we cast the circle, you know, for the gardenerians amongst us, you know, like that's something
yep.
that's really important to set that circle, right? And what we're doing,
yep.
I think, you know, apart from calling in elements or gods or, you know, whomever it is that you're inviting into that circle. And you know, different traditions do it different ways. But generally, there's this moment where we set a container and we say, in this container, with all of our allies, whoever they are, we're going to do this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And really what we do is we take this moment where we say, you know, time doesn't exist here or it doesn't exist in quite the same way as it does, you know, for the rest of the day. And so we're going to make this special moment. And in this special moment, when we're in between the worlds, that's where we do our magic. That's where we make our changes that hopefully go on and have, you know, those ripples, right? And
yeah.
I
yeah.
think we think that making a magic container is only something that you do in ritual. But what you just described, you know, the talking about everything that's gone on with the day and then sitting down to dinner, that's really no different
yeah.
than cleansing and coming into the circle prepared. It's saying, you know, I'm going to uh-huh. scrub off all the stuff that's happened throughout the day, get it all out, and
yeah.
now I'm going to walk into the meal ritually prepared. It's the same thing. We just think that, you know, we've confused the fact that what we do in a magical circle is only meant to be there. And I don't think that's true.
Right.
I think we can take the same practices, taking a breath, huh. grounding, casting a circle, going into magic. None of that is any different than when you, you know, sit down and have a good meal with somebody. All those same steps can happen.
I love that.
That's beautiful. I just, you know, I
yeah.
just think in the day-to-day, we forget about that. I mean, this whole thing that I described about not, you know, bringing the poison into the room that the food is in or into the meal that we're about to have, I never thought about it necessarily as a magical thing. It's, you know, more of an agita thing, you know, like you don't want to bring stress to the table because you don't need to be stressed out while you're eating. And then the food
That's
makes
right.
your stomach upset and then you're more stressed
yeah.
out and you become sick. But I love the way you just made it magic. I mean, that's just beautiful.
Yeah. I didn't really ever connect that. Like, for example, we are getting ready to move next month into a much better layout for our family. You know, because we haven't had a dining room. We haven't had room in our house for a dining room in
yeah.
pretty much, let's see. I mean, even when we did have one, we didn't sit at it. But yeah, it's been quite a few years. And I think, to me, that's one of the things I'm looking forward to the most with this house and this change in
mm-hmm.
life is that
mm-hmm.
we will have a spot to sit and eat. We will have space
mm-hmm.
to have company, to have parties like that, you know, and gatherings
mm-hmm.
and just, you know. Yeah, I miss that. You don't
Can I offer
realize
you
how
a
much
little...
you miss it. Huh?
That's true. can I offer you a little magical working when you do move?
Absolutely, yes, please.
So when you go into that dining room and you have that table there, whether it, you know, seats four people or, you know, 14 people, doesn't matter how big it is. But when you look in that dining room, imagine that it's part of your ritual room, that it's a sacred temple. And in that sacred temple, you're going to share ideas and tears and joy and laughter and, you know, all those things, right? So imagine that it's a temple. And the second thing is when you've got that table laid out, before you have your first meal on it, consecrate it as a sacred altar. And it can be an altar to your family. It can be an altar to good times. An altar to open communication. You know, we love the idea of sitting around the table and hashing stuff out, right? So take whatever magical tool you want, whether it's an athame or a wand or your hand, doesn't matter what it is, but consecrate that table as a sacred altar in the middle of your temple. And all of a sudden, as soon as that becomes a magical item, the likelihood that you will sit down at that table and you will have guests over and magic will happen at that table, I mean, it goes through the roof, right? Mm-hmm. It becomes such a... always, if you can, if it makes sense. And then when you have your first meal, doesn't matter whether it's, you know, pizza because you've been moving all day and that's what's easiest, but, you know, take a little bit of that pepperoni or, you know, whatever it is, take a little bit of that cheese, and just offer it to your house spirits or the house gods, even if you don't know who they are yet. You know, just say, hey, we're here. We've moved in. First thing I'm going to do is offer you a little bit of something off of my plate. Hope you enjoy it, and we'll chat soon. You know, I think if you can do that as soon as you move in or close to it, the relationship you'll have with the house and the dining room, I think it will just be superb. That's the way I like to do things if I can.
Thank you so much. Oh, yes, I am definitely doing that. Wow.
I'm going to do it, too. Even though we've lived here a few months already, I think that's something everybody, if you haven't done this already, folks that are listening, I think that's a beautiful thing to do. I think, you know, cleanse your kitchen however you see fit. Spiritually, and your dining room table. I think it's always possible to do a reset. I didn't do this, so I think tomorrow I'm going to do this. I'm going to do a cleanse in the kitchen. I may sage it and salt it and start over with my dining room table and really consecrate it and make it even more of what we are working towards. I think that's a beautiful thing to do. That's great.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
My stove too. Yeah. I'm going to consecrate my stove and my refrigerator as well.
There you go.
I'm just going to consecrate.
Yeah.
Why not?
That's a great idea. And you know what you can do to you know, keep it all going? If you've got a ceremonial knife that you use, you know, an athame or something like that. So I always think, you know, if I've got a consecrated knife, why don't I take that consecrated knife that has been consecrated on an altar, you know, once a month when the moon is full, when we gather to adore the queen of the wise. Let's take that sacred knife and take it into the kitchen and touch every one of your cooking knives, every one of your serving knives, because if you think about what an athame does, right, it sort of cuts the circle, or it cuts away the things that we don't need. And if you think about what you do with a cooking knife, if you've got a nice chef's knife, you know, you're cutting away the fat from the meat, or you're cutting the peel away from the potato, whatever it is you're doing, it's the same idea. You're shaping the food in such a way to bring out the best of it, right? And so you can do that when you're doing your reset. One of my favorite things, if you're someone that uses a wand, take your wand and go and touch every wooden spoon or spatula in your kitchen, because I think the wand and the spoon are the same thing. If you think about it, right, a wand is an extension of your energy, right? You use it to project energy. And a wooden spoon is kind of the same way, because if you use a wooden spoon the right way, and it's true with a metal spoon too, but if you use a wooden spoon, you can learn things. You can direct your energy, the energy that's in your hand. Think about it. If you had a big pot of stew, if you wanted to check to see if the vegetables were done or if anything was sticking on the bottom, you wouldn't plunge a hand right into this hot boiling stew to check out what was on the bottom.
Right.
You'd use a wooden spoon,
no.
right?
One would hope so.
Yeah, right. So if you use your wooden spoon, it gives you information. Like, it's, you know, it's not your hands, but you can tell what's going on at the bottom of the pot. So if you think about your magical tool, consecrate your knives, consecrate your wooden spoons. If you work with cauldrons or cauldron energy, think about all the cauldrons in your kitchen, your Instapot, your crock pot, your Dutch oven, your oven. You mentioned the fridge.
I love me an
all
Instapot.
All those are big cauldrons, right? So consecrate them. And if you start looking at your kitchen, think about all your magical tools. And then start thinking, like, instead of them just living on an altar somewhere, imagine them actually in the kitchen. You'll be amazed at how many magical tools you use every day. And if you consecrate them, if you make them sacred, then every time you cook, guess what? You're doing magic every time.
Ah!
I love you.
This is awesome.
I got to go clean the kitchen and start over. Oh, my God. This is so fun. Oh my gosh. No, this makes it that's great. You know, we put magic and stuff, like I put protection magic in the jewelry I make, and then I, you know, there's love magic in some of the jewelry that's been given to me, and there's protection magic in this, and there's safety magic in that, which aren't necessarily the same thing. And they're always there, and they're consecrated, and they always work. Why not do the same thing with the kitchen and everything in it? So that it is consecrated, so that it does work for magic. And, you know, like you said, the wooden spoon is the wand, and it's an extension, and this is how you, you know, prepare what you're going to eat, and this is how you're helping people and showing love. It's all magical. So, I'm really excited about starting over in my kitchen tomorrow.
Right? I'm like, can we move now?
Yeah, but you can do it in the kitchen. You can still do it in the kitchen that you're in right now. You're taking all those tools with you. So, I mean, why not? Just like restart into the kitchen you're in now, even though you're not going to be there that long. It doesn't mean, you know, magic doesn't have to wait because you're not where you're going to be. Magic is right where you are. So why not do it?
True.
You know what I mean?
Well, and why not leave blessings for the next people who move in here?
Sure.
That's true.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's true.
You know, we want the house to treat them well, too, so that there's no problems. You know, it's all circular, you know. And I also love the fact, sir, that you put some libations in this book. Just saying.
Ooh. Yay.
I'm a good fan of libations,
I'm loving the libations. I'm seeing a mojito that I don't, because I don't really drink. I'm not a drinker, but I love the idea that, you know, you put things in that, like, there's no booze in the mojito. You don't have to add liquor if you don't want to, which I love.
That's wonderful.
And it's still magical, you know.
It really is. You know, there are a bunch of cocktails in the book, which absolutely have alcohol in them. And then there's, a few mocktails in the book as well. And I really do. I think that's important. You know, just because somebody doesn't drink alcohol doesn't mean they can't have delicious drinks. And it doesn't mean that those drinks can't be sacred, right? We always think of, wine. I mean, what a fantastic gift from the gods. I mean, hail Dionysus for coming up with wine. That is brilliant. But obviously, not everybody can or should drink wine, right? So There are lots of things that you can do where you still get lots of flavors, and the gods would love them. I mean, I think, you know, if Dionysus came over and we made a nice virgin margarita, I think he'd be fine with that. I don't think he'd miss the booze, you know. I think Dionysus would be like, oh, this is tasty. I love it. I don't have a dunk.
Well, it's interesting that you say that because I don't drink, but my gods do. I have a glass. I have two glasses on the altar. One is of sapphire gin for the mother, and Glenlivet 15-year-old scotch for the father. And they drink it. They drink it. It's insane how much these people drink. I mean, these gods do not fuck about. Excuse my French, but they like their
booze. Oh, no, you and I speak
French. Doesn't matter
that
I don't drink it.
Awesome.
Yeah.
They have great taste.
You know, I think
it's alcohol. I'm sorry.
Say that again.
I said my gods have great taste in alcohol, and I apologize. You were saying?
Oh no, I was just going to say. I think that's so true. Like, you know, I put offerings out all the time. Now I might leave an offering out in the back garden. I was putting out some just before spring. I was putting out some pomegranates, and you know, beckoning the spring to come back and. You know, that the sweetness that comes in the spring. And you know, the gods that actually show up to eat them are wild turkeys that wander around the land that's out behind where I live. Who am I
How
to say
cool.
whether those are the gods or whether they're the turkeys? It doesn't really matter. But you're right. The gods do drink them. The fae people do drink them. The spirits of your land absolutely do things with that. I'll tell you a funny story. We often put out little offerings. We have some ravens that come and sit in our tree every morning, regular as clockwork. And we'll put food out there for them sometimes. We'll put offerings, and they'll come down and they'll snack on it, take it off, do what they do with it. If we don't put out little offerings, they will sometimes bring us a gift. And we know it's them because they put it in the same spot every time. They'll put a walnut shell or a peanut or a glass marble that they found somewhere. And if we go a couple of days without, yeah, it's amazing. If we go a couple of days without putting out food, they'll stand on the table in the backyard and you can see them sharpening their beaks. And I swear they're saying, okay, look, we brought you that shiny marble yesterday. Where's our food, bitch? Yeah, so, you know, I don't know whether that's the ravens of Odin or, you know, any other gods that are associated with ravens, but they're part of our neighborhood. We're part of their neighborhood. You know, they've been nesting in that tree for years before we moved in. So, you know, we're good neighbors. We leave them a little something. They leave us a little something. If we forget, they remind us. If we forget for a few days, they really remind us. So you're right. I think the gods and the fae do drink our offerings. I think that's great.
Yeah. Well, I always like to say, remember the gods so they remember you.
Yeah,
that is the truth. It really is. You know, my partner Phoenix LaFay, she wrote a book called What Is Remembered Lives. And that's part of what she says in her book as well, is this idea of, you know, we often think the gods don't need us, but if we don't call their names, if we don't tell their stories, they can cease to exist. Think about, there must be thousands upon thousands of gods that have disappeared to history because nobody calls on them anymore. You know, so you're right.
Yeah,
I think if we remember the gods, they'll remember us. And I think that's good for everyone.
I agree. Oh, I love this. This is such a great conversation.
Yeah.
I mean, quite the hell out of this. This is amazing. So I didn't get to the part about tofu, but is there a place for tofu in this world, really?
Oh, God's almighty. Yeah, there is. there is. It's not my favorite food in the world, but I will tell you, a chef friend of mine, she makes a chicken fried tofu, basically.
Ooh.
That is to
yeah.
absolutely to live for. And her recipe is a highly guarded secret. I have tried to get this recipe out of her for years. I've watched people give her lap dances and massages and buy very expensive booze. And will she give up this recipe?
Wow.
No, she won't. But I will tell you,
wow.
that is absolutely fantastic. So, you know,
oh,
do I want to have
want
a tofurkey on
now.
My table? Yeah. Oh, God. Mm. If I could get that recipe, I've tried everything. But is there a place for turkey for tofurkey? Yeah, probably.
No,
not the first thing on my menu.
No.
But if you give it to me, I'll eat it.
I can't. See, and there are some things I just cannot do. I cannot do durian. I cannot do tofu. I tried to do tofu. I really did. I gave it the old college try. I tried squeezing it with bricks. I tried putting big pans on top of it to try to get the water out of it. I have tried sitting on it. Nothing works. It is still a pile of freaking goo. I hate it. I do not love it. I do not understand it. Listen, if I'm going to go meatless, I'm going to eat vegetables. Tofu to me is absolutely a waste of my life. I've tried to like it. I really have. Honestly, the only place I can see tofu is in miso soup. That is the only place it belongs because somebody else came up with it, and that's the way it's been for years. So that is the only way I can tolerate it. However, I do, I'm not disparaging
like
people who like it. I'm just saying I can't do it. I can't.
Yeah,
do
no,
it.
I hear that. But what do you really think about tofu? I mean, tell us what's really on your mind.
Yes. I'm always hiding.
I'll tell you
I'm
a
so
really good use for it. I know. I'll tell you one way I like it.
Yeah.
This is, you can make, and you can find recipes for this. I've got one, but you can find them online as well. You can make a really, if you know someone who's vegan, you can make a really good ranch dressing with, or any creamy dressing with tofu. And it really, if you want, you have to, you know, there's a few things you've got to add to it, like nutritional yeast, and you want to use plenty of herbs, but you take a block of tofu, throw it in the food processor or the blender, you know, add a little oil and herbs and spices and whatnot, and it makes a really delicious creamy ranch dressing that's non-dairy and vegan. So if you do have someone that's lactose intolerant, that's a really good use for it. My daughter can't eat lactose, and so I'll make that, and she loves it because now she can have, you know, pizza and ranch dressing or French fries and ranch dressing or have it on salad. So that's a really good use of tofu. It makes a really good creamy base. That's fun. And that's about my only recipe for tofu.
That's so unfair when a child cannot enjoy things the way they used to. You know, I find it so unfair, these peanut allergies, how we've poisoned the planet so badly. When I was growing up, children didn't have peanut allergies. It was unheard of, literally unheard of. And it's really disturbing, and I really wish people would pay more attention because we are destroying this planet. We are killing the food. Without the bees, there is nothing. And, you know, children are not enjoying their lives the way we used to. I mean, I've never had a peanut butter sandwich in my a peanut butter and jelly sandwich in my whole life. It just did not occur to my parents that was a thing. But most kids have. And most kids have loved peanut butter and jelly sandwiches most of their lives. And I never had that. And to think that somebody can't have it, it's really crazy. It's like you can't enjoy one of the simple pleasures of being a kid. I find it really sad. But anyway.
Yeah, you know, well, I think some of that has to do, you know, apart from people that have celiac disease, which is something really different, you know, most folks that have gluten issues or gluten intolerances, a lot of that's actually really only occurred in the last 50 years, really, since we started making processed bread, using a lot of processed flours, right? Because they're not whole wheat or whole grains, and it's really made a difference. Where the you remember all the like the sliced white bread, where they would say now with extra vitamin D or now with iron or calcium, they had to put those things back in. Because in the milling process, they were taking all those good things out. And there's a fair body of science that's suggesting that many people are developing gluten intolerances because they've never really had good glutens in homemade bread. Now, again, you know, if you're celiac, all the magic in the world isn't going to change the fact that, you know, wheat is poison for you. But there is... there is a growing body of evidence that we've created this problem by manufacturing breads instead of making breads. It's pretty amazing.
Wow.
I agree. Speaking of bread, you know, you just reminded me of the one thing tofu was good in. There is a baker local to us that makes a lower carb, it's not carb free, but it is a lower carb bread, and she uses tofu in the mixture, and I don't know what it's substituting, but it makes the it's the only low carb bread I've ever had that was actually palatable. Like you could eat it and enjoy it, and it's made with tofu. So there you go. That ties that together.
What are these blasphemous words you are saying? Low carb bread. I don't understand what you mean. What are these words? What does that mean?
Okay, listen to me. When we're off the air, if you want me to send you a loaf of this bread so you can test it, I will be happy to pick up a loaf for you and send it to you.
I'll take it.
Excellent.
And I'll get back
to you
about it.
We will discuss after we are off the air. They only make it on Tuesdays, so I will call in and I will get you a loaf, and I will have to figure out how to package it to get it to you before it turns into something not palatable, but it's really good.
There you go.
It's really good, and I will send it.
You know,
I'll
tell you a little secret about being a kitchen witch, by the way. That's a very generous offer for you to send me that bread. But I have to tell you, it kind of happens all the time. As soon as you start telling people that you're a kitchen witch, and especially if they try your food and they like it, I've had people go all across the world, and they bring me spices from wherever they've been, or the... They bring me, I have a really dear friend of mine who, she's amazing. She's a hunter. She's very conscientious about it. All the food, all the meat proteins that her family eat throughout the year, she has hunted and field dressed and you know, cut up and served. And every now and again, she'll get an elk or a boar or something like that. And she will offer me, you know, a shoulder or a steak or, you know, something. And I'm super grateful that she will do that for me. And I also know that, you know, in the final moments of that animal's life, she has done absolutely everything she can to make sure it is the quickest, most humane moment that it can be, right? Yeah. And, you know, really think about it. We should all be so lucky that somebody is conscious about the way we go out of the world, right? And
I'll get some
of that. Yeah. And but it's a thing. When people know you're a food witch, like if you are sometimes short on food in your life, tell people you're a food witch. And before you know it, people will start sending you all kinds of foods and spices and recipes. Oh, you should try this. I've gotten more recipes since this book has been out. You know, it's taken me years to collect recipes. I get so many of them now, and it's wonderful, and I really appreciate it. But, yeah, if you want to fill your pantry up with unique spices, tell people you're a food witch, and they'll give you all kinds of stuff.
That is so cool.
I'm going to send you I am actually going to send you pictures of my cabinet where I keep my spices. I have an entire cabinet, three levels, devoted to only spices. It's crazy.
Wow.
I'm very appreciative of different types of paprika and different types of cinnamon and, you know, stuff I've mentioned earlier during our conversation. I have vanilla extract. I have vanilla bean paste. I've got like three different versions of vanilla. You know, it's incredible, and I love it because it is a different spice, a different feel, even though it started off as the same plant. There's so much can be done with smoked paprika that people are like, smoked paprika? That must be good on deviled eggs. It's good on everything. It's good on mushy
everything.
I make mushy peas.
Yeah.
It's really just. I'll tell you a story about spices that I just love, right? So when we think about magic, I just love this. When we think about magic, think about, you know, many, many magical books that you've probably read or you've got on your shelf. There's lists of correspondences, right? You should do this kind of spell on a full moon or this kind of spell on a Tuesday or use, you know, these herbs, right? All the lists of correspondences. And that's all great. And I think, if you want to do some really powerful magic, go to your spice cabinet. And I tell a little bit about this in the book where I'm talking about the goddess Inanna. So we know because of clay cuneiform tablets that have been deciphered that are, you know, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 years old, we know the kinds of spices that they had in their time. And we know, to some degree, how they flavored their foods. And we know how the ancient Sumerians made offerings to their gods because they've given us these clues, these snippets of information. So imagine you've got a god that you really want to connect with or have a relationship with now. You can go through and make a meal using the spices that Inanna or Inanna's priestesses and priests would have used 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 years ago. And if you get cumin and coriander and wild arugula and leeks and garlic, if you get them, all of those mixed up, get the smell on your hands, those are the exact same spices that the ancient Sumerians used to cook to give offerings to Inanna. Think about that. With what's in your spice cabinet right now, you could travel 6,000 years back in time and present a ritual tonight to Inanna with the foods she would remember. Isn't that amazing? And you can do that for Dionysus.
Wow.
You can do that for Athena. You can do that for anyone. And if you're not somebody that works closely with any gods for whatever reason, you can do that with ancestors as well. My grandmother, I was just telling this the other day to somebody, every Friday night or most Friday nights, I'd go over to my grandmother's house and I'd spend the weekend there. My mom, when she was very young and growing up, she worked on the weekends, right? So I was often with my grandmother. And we would, on Friday night, she would nearly always make chips, you know, French fries. We'd have chips and we'd have a little bit of steak, which was a real rarity. And then we'd have marrow fat peas that were very salty and delicious. So this was our typical Friday night dinner with a cup of tea. And while we were eating that on our TV trays, there was a game show that was playing that we used to watch every Friday night. It was kind of a mix between a game show and a variety show. And we'd watch this show and eat our dinner. And because of the magic of the internet and YouTube, I actually found that show that my grandmother and I used to watch. There are episodes of it on YouTube. So I can now make, you know, she's been dead. Unfortunately, she's been gone 17 years now. But I can recreate that meal on a Friday night. I can make the chips. Yeah. I can make the steak. I can make the peas. And I can have the sounds in the background that I would have been listening to as a 10-year-old. And I can bring back her memory. I can remember conversations I had with her because of the taste of the food and the sound of the television basically playing in the background. So you don't have to just do this kind of thing for the gods. You can, you know, think of meals that your favorite aunt or your, you know, grandparent or a husband that's deceased or coven member that you don't see anymore. You know, you can make the meals that remind you of when you spent time with them, and it will all come flooding back. And what a lovely devotion for, you know, ancestors, for our beloved dead and for our gods. So yeah, open up that spice cabinet, figure out where you want to go in the world, what time you want to go in the world's history, and what gods you want to worship for that night or do ritual with, pull out those spices and cook the foods they'd recognize. It's magic. It really is.
I'm going to do that. I'm excited. I was looking forward to cooking tomorrow, but now I'm excited about cooking tomorrow. Wow. Oh, boy. I cannot even get over this conversation. I am loving this. This is amazing. Wow. You have given me so much to think about, and sis, we definitely have to, like, rework our kitchens and start doing this.
Yeah.
This is just fun. It is just another avenue of witchcraft that I didn't even think about before. So I'm really excited. I hope our listeners are really excited. Guys, you've got to get this book. This book is amazing.
Mine will be here someday.
You're gonna love it. I'm telling you, the magic of food, rituals, offerings, and why we eat together. We've only touched on some of this, and I know there is so much more to talk about. But we are almost out of time, and I'm going to ask you to come back on because I think this is a conversation that needs to be continued and reshared and rediscussed, because I think people forget that you can be that spiritual being, you can be that witch, no matter what the activity is. But in the kitchen touches more than just you. It's a beautiful thing. This has been so fantastic. We cannot thank you enough for coming on tonight.
Yeah.
It's my absolute pleasure, and I'd love to come back anytime. You know, with talk about food or booze, or food and booze and
awesome.
Cheese and magic.
Yes,
and that's food,
and cheese.
Seriously, guys, if you want to find out more about this amazing man, www.queenandraven.com. That's Queen and Raven. All one word. We have a link to it on the show page, but if you want to write it down right now, it's www. And I will spell it gwionraven.com. Definitely, this man is amazing. I am sure there are other books by you that I need to get. Please tell me what they are and where we can.
Well, actually, there's a couple more books in the works. I can't say too much about them, but there's actually a book that I just finished co-writing with my amazing partner, Phoenix LaFay, that's going to be all about modern rites of passage, things that we can do today. That book will be coming out in, I think, December or early next year. And then... yeah, so that one will be out soon enough. I'm looking forward to that one. And you know, there'll be a little bit of food magic in that one, too, I'm sure.
Great.
Wonderful.
That's great. Thank you again, Gwen Raven. Thank you so much. And I'm going to hit you up after this and get your address so I can send you that low-carb bread.
Yeah.
That sounds amazing. Thank you so much for having me on. This has been so much fun.
Yeah. thank you for coming.
We've loved
and
it. Thank you.
I look forward to the next one.
Sounds great. Thank you.
Good night.
Bye.
Blessings to you. Good night. Sis.
Yeah.
We're out. Let's go.
All right. Y'all have a good weekend. This has been an amazing show. We will see y'all next, or we will talk to you tomorrow, 3, and
yes,
we hope to tune in. Love you guys. Have a good weekend.
Bye.
Night.
That was perfect.